Blog Talk Radio.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Though your world is torn apart and you're left with a broken heart and you feel that there's no real healing inside. Oh no, but this I know. You cannot feel it, just believe it. He'll make everything. He'll make it all right. He will make it all right.
Oh, wow. God definitely makes everything all right. When you think he can't, when you don't see a way, he is able to do it. I can guarantee it. And by the end of tonight's show, you will absolutely believe it for yourself. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, and you are listening to Don't Give Up Radio. I'm really thankful to be with you tonight. I say that every week, but it is. It's a real pleasure and a gift to be able to do this show and in my own very small way to be able to try to make a difference in the lives of people who are on their journey to becoming everything that God has said that you can be. He has pre-ordered your steps. He has already decided what your outcome is going to be, meaning that he has a hope and a plan and a future for you that is good. The key is to trust in him and to be able to go through the valleys and the midnight hours with him. And I've often said that the midnight hour is not a time on the clock, but it is a place in your life. It's a place that every one of us have to go through, every one of us has to face, but you can't face it alone. Your hand in God's hand is what makes the difference. And tonight, I particularly am meditative about that. I just came from the funeral of my mother-in-law, and, you know, we think back on her trials, and just as someone who, you know, had 8 kids and went through the whole, you know, civil rights and depression and all that stuff, and to have raised her family at the best of her ability, and to have everyone talk about how strong she was. And that kind of strength actually comes from building a muscle. She had many opportunities in her life, Joanne Wayans, to give up, to step back, to throw in the towel, but she kept going. And my own mother came here from another island without a college education and, you know, just a new immigrant here and had to find her way. And it's remarkable what she's been able to accomplish without any assistance, without any help. And, you know, I often think about how they talk about the new generation and the fact that, you know, we seem a little bit softer. We seem a little bit unable to be as sturdy. Well, I was talking to my daughter today, and someone was sharing how they used to walk. We live in New York City. From one borough to another, almost every day, they just walked. And I remember doing that myself. One day I had to get to school. I had to get to class. I had a major test, and I didn't have a Metro card. And it was pouring rain, and I dropped my kids off to the train station because they had Metro cards. I did not. And I walked. I walked from the Bronx all the way into Harlem, up into my classroom, and got there on time, though I was just soaking wet. But I say all this to say that every one of us has a story. Every one of us is going through something. And never underestimate what you are going through, because I guarantee you that you're not alone. And tonight we're going to hear from Billy Dorsey, who today you know him as producer of artists like Lecrae, who's number one in the Christian rap game, and he has won Stella Awards and Grammy Awards and Dove Awards, and he's only 36 years old, but he has learned a great deal. He has experienced a great deal. And so he's here tonight to share with us and to help us go through the journey together. Billy, I'm so thankful that you're here with us tonight. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Jackie. It's an honor to be here with you and your listeners tonight.
Well, I'm just really thankful to have you on. We met in person about a month ago, and I found it extremely pleasurable, and I couldn't wait for this day to happen so that other people could hear a little bit more about your story and find out who you are. So let's start with that. Let's start with the fact that today, as I just mentioned, you know, you are sitting in a place where you, Grammy winner, Dove Award, Stellar winner, and that's something that many aspire to be. They want to be in that place where they're winning the Grammys. You know, they visualize that, think about it every day, and they want to be successful in this industry. Is this something that you always wanted to do?
It doesn't matter where you end up. It's always about where you begin. And people a lot of times look at the outcome. You see, I remember watching Preachers of L.A., and one of the pastors said, "You see my glory, but you didn't see my story." And so I'm a big believer in what God does on the end result is only important because of the journey that it took to get there. So my testimony is, in a nutshell, that 13 years ago I signed a recording contract to sing gospel. Grew up in both of my parents are pastors, so I come from the church background, been singing, you know, as far back as I can remember in church. And signed a record deal to sing gospel when I was a sophomore in college.
Did you always have the passion, desire for music as you were growing up? I know when we talked, you said, you know, you grew up listening to Jodeci and Michael Jackson and those guys. When and how did your passion for music begin?
My dad sings. So for me, as far, you know, from early childhood, you know, for a young man, you see dad do something, you want to emulate dad. My dad has one of the richest baritone voices that I've heard. Listening
wow.
to my dad sing as a kid, I just wanted to sing like my dad. And I don't know if I've ever actually said that before, but that's
wow.
where it started for me. And then, you know, my parents being in church, they listened to the Commissions and the John P. Keys and the Shirley Caesars and those people. But, yeah, so I've always had a desire to sing. I've always had a gift for singing.
And as you started to mention, you you know, grew up in a Christian home, and there, you know, I've had many guests on the show, and it, you know, it either goes one way or the other. Either they love it or they rebelled against it. But you're one that actually absolutely loved it. Talk to us about your family and who are they to you as you know, the cloth and the fiber of your life.
Well, my parents are everything. They're my heroes. My dad was in the Air Force. So when you grow up in an Air Force family where you move around a lot, you become very close-knit because some of the countries you move to, they don't even speak the same language as you. So you become, you know, you draw in close ranks within your family, and you guys become extremely close. That's kind of been the story of my family, and it remains so today. So I don't think I would be ministering or preaching now if it wasn't for my parents. Both of them are pastors. My dad's an apostle. I don't believe I would be singing gospel if my parents hadn't exposed me to that. I know I'd be doing something with music, but I don't think I'd be doing what I'm doing now had it not been for them praying over me and planting the seed of doing something that God would be pleased with.
So what I'm hearing right now is a very positive story. You know, you're happy. You enjoy your family. You enjoy music. And you start out on your aspirations, and it looks like everything's falling into place. And you started to share with us that you were granted a contract with a Christian label. Now,
that's right.
Now I'm ready to hear that. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we signed our first record deal. I was 19. My gospel group, Serenity, which is myself, my brother Emmanuel, and our older friend Lamont Scott, we were opening up a concert at Louisiana Tech, my college, for the Mississippi Mass Choir. And their road manager happened to be, his name is John Wiley, he happened to be an A&R for a major label that was based, or they had a branch based in Houston. And so he heard us sing, and he was blown away by it, and he offered us a recording contract as a result. And because of that deal, they moved us to Houston, and we started working on the album.
And now, what was that like for you guys in your hometown? How was that received? How did your family receive?
It was phenomenal. I mean, there was only one other big group out of Shreveport at that time. It was a group that they used to be called Under 21, but the world knows them as Profile. Those are my brothers. They had a number one R&B hit with a song called Liar back then. And so they were the only other group out of our time that, you know, that actually made it out of the city. There's a lot of talent still in Shreveport, but a lot of artists don't make it out of there. So when we signed a recording contract and we were singing gospel, not only was the city pleased with it and proud of us, because we used to open up all the major concerts that came through town, but our parents could be proud of it because we were singing the type of music that gave God glory. So it was
exactly.
Huge, actually, in the city. Yeah, it was huge.
So everything sounds pretty wonderful. Christian label, Christian group, you're signed. What happened?
They paired us with V. Michael McKay, one of the most gifted songwriters of all time, I'd say. Wrote When Sunday Comes for Daryl Coley and The Potter's House with, you know, for Jermaine Hawkins, and this mega, you know, successful gospel songs. Paired us with him, we started working on our project, and long story short, Lamont, he never moved to Houston. He commuted, and as a result, it took him longer to learn the songs. My brother and I lived in Houston, so we were there for all the rehearsals, and what we would have to do would be to record the songs, then take it back to Shreveport, teach him the songs, then he would come back with us. So it slowed the process down. And so the label decided this isn't working for us, and they brought in a new guy to replace him, and I fought against it.
I see. Okay.
Yep.
You know, so you fought against it. Why? You know, what was your impetus to, you know, to stand up like that?
Loyalty. I'm an athlete. I played basketball in school, so in high school, so for me, I very much we're on the same team. If something happens to you, it happens to me. If, you know, we're not going to let something happen to one of the members of our team and it doesn't happen to us all or not stick up for them. So we came there together. We were going to stay together. That was my heart on it.
And so as a result, what happened?
They froze out our contract. They basically said, if you're not going to let us replace him, then we're not going to release anything on you, but you can't go anywhere else. And it was a 3-album deal or 7 years. And whichever one came first, and we never made it through the first album because they stopped it in the middle of the process when I stood up for Lamar. So they basically said, okay, you can't go anywhere for 7 years, and I ended up homeless because of that.
Wow. 3-album deal. You know, I've heard people say that 3-album deals sound wonderful, but you really have to look it through carefully because it may not always be that wonderful because you don't know who you're in partnership with. And this is
That's
a Christian right. label, and I'm sure you didn't expect to have that type of situation come out of, you know, your relationship with a Christian label. Just quickly in terms of how did that open up your eyes to business?
It allowed me to see that when someone says Christian on the front of a business, I want to look at them even harder. Because there are a lot of people, and I'm not saying this is true of all, but there are a lot of people that I've experienced in my years in this industry that they'll hide behind the Christian title. Oh, I'm a Christian lawyer. I'm a Christian record producer. And they'll use that to get you to trust taking advantage of you in a bigger way because of the Christian label. You know, you gave them an opportunity. So although they were well within their legal rights to do what they did, knowing that they were a Christian label and it was a Christian record deal made me take a step back and start evaluating things differently in terms of who I would do business with.
So now when you say they froze you out, you are not allowed to perform, sing anywhere. Your actual source of income and livelihood was frozen.
That's right.
And consequently, you ended up homeless and living
right.
in the Fifth Ward. Okay,
that's
now
right.
I know you go there now annually as a time of remembrance, but help us to understand this process for you. Describe the Fifth Ward for us, and then tell us how you ended up taking refuge there.
Fifth Ward, I mean, still to this day, it's you know, prostitutes walking the streets. There's a lot of crack addicts. It's not as bad as it was back then, but it is, you know, really big on drugs, really big on prostitution. Back then it used to be really big on gang violence. They called it the Bloody Nickel because it was a heavily blood gang infested area. So it was really rough. The reason why I ended up there was because of the record deal, I couldn't sing, I couldn't perform, but it didn't say anything about me writing or producing. So I started writing songs and producing, and there was a studio in Fifth Ward where the owner, I knew he sold drugs, I didn't know he used drugs, but the owner offered me a salary basically to come in and run his studio. So it was a means to an end, kind of a way to make ends meet, and it was in the Fifth Ward. So that's how I ended up there even when I became homeless, because I really didn't have anywhere else in Houston to go.
Right. So instead of sleeping on the street, even though you're aware that this guy, you know, was doing some kind of drugs, you just felt like it was a better deal than exposing yourself to the elements on the street every day. So what was that experience like? What happened while you were there?
At first, I actually did sleep outside on the street. Prior to me asking him if I could go and live inside of that building, I did. Because I was thinking that it may be a short-term thing. I'd find some opportunity or I'd get a job somewhere. But, you know, when you can't take a shower and go to an interview, I don't think anybody's trying to hire you. You know, those kind of things matter. There are a lot of people that I found that are homeless. I'll say this because I think it needs to be said. There are a lot of people that are on the streets that are homeless, but they're not on drugs, they're not on alcohol, they're not there because of some vice. It's just circumstances that put them in that position. And I was one of those people. You know, circumstances beyond my control, I was in a position where I couldn't defend myself or create a better avenue for myself is the right thing to say. And so when I got tired of living on the physical streets, I asked him if I could come and live inside that building, and he opened up the opportunity for me to do that.
And so what was that experience like?
Well, it was hell, because once I got in there, I knew he sold drugs. I didn't know that he smoked, he dipped cigarettes and marijuana in formaldehyde and smoked that. So when he would do that and get high, he would just zone out. And sometimes they have a phrase when you see people use that, they call it getting. So that means is like you're literally just not there for whatever the extended period of time is. And that's what would happen. He would lock the studio every night. So it wasn't an uncommon thing that the doors would be locked, but he'd come back every morning, and I was free to move around throughout the day as long as I was there before he locked the studio again at night. But when he would get stuck on lead, he might be gone for a week at a time or a week and a half. And if I was locked out of the building, then I'm back out in the elements. I moved in that studio in the winter of 2001. I wasn't trying to be outside in the elements. So I just had to stay inside the studio.
And, so you were locked inside of the building for days at a time. Is there a refrigerator? Is there groceries? What's the setting?
There were no groceries unless my friends brought some. The refrigerator was molded. I shared my testimony tonight at church when I ministered. The water that came out of the faucet was molded, so you're not taking a bath. You're not washing your face. You're not brushing your teeth. You know, the basic things that we take for granted, those things are not happening. And there was no heat in that building. And it's a stone building in the cold of the winter. So, you know, if you've ever been in those type of places, they hold in whatever the temperature is outside. So if it's hot outside, you're sweltering. If it's cold outside, you are in an ice box. And that was where I found myself.
You know, I'm listening to your story, and I'm thinking about how you got there. I'm wondering about the young man that you defended, the young man that you said, I've got your back, we're a group, we're sticking this out together. And then you got froze out. Where was he in this picture? Was he just as loyal, just as supportive?
No, he wasn't loyal, and I've shared this before. I lost so much weight, Jackie, when I was going through that people thought that I was on drugs, and I've never tried a drug. That's not my thing. It never has been my thing. But I actually found out after that he was the same guy that I defended and lost the deal behind, was in Shreveport telling people that I looked like I was on crack. He was actually spreading that to people, and it hurt. You know, it was definitely a disappointment when I knew the sacrifice that I'd made for him. But all those things, looking back on it, were life lessons. And some of the things that I think God allows us to experience with people, it's not for us to say, you know what, I'll never trust again. It's for us to learn how to forgive.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of man of God could I be if I can't forgive when somebody does something that's hurtful to me? How can I share that with someone else? And so some of the things I experienced during that time were growth things for me. It wasn't even about him.
Well, you know, I'm also wondering, because you started off by sharing that you had a great family. So I'm wondering, why didn't you go back home? Why didn't you just, you know, say, hi, Mom and Dad, I this is the situation?
Pride. The reason why I didn't, my parents' door was always open. I've had other people ask me that, you know, news interviews and things like that. Why didn't you go home? I'm the oldest son. So I have younger brothers, and there's definitely a thing with younger brothers that they look up to and follow and emulate what the oldest one does. So me striving for success, they have the motivation to know my brother made it, I can make it. If I had given up and gone back home, then when times got tough for them, they could have fallen back on that and thought it was okay for them to just go back home and give up. So it was definitely a pride thing, not wanting my little brothers to see, you know, that it's to think that it's okay to just quit. And then, you know, I was successful, you know, in Shreveport. We were well known. When we signed that record deal, it was a big thing. So everybody's looking at us like we're about to be the successful guys, and then here I go, you know, coming back home with nothing. I didn't want to have to face that. So it was definitely pride and also wanting to be a good example on the other end for my younger brothers.
When I'm tired of the rain, taking off, I can stay. When I can't run anymore, giving up, that you made of me. Lord, I
Give Up Radio with Jackie Wayans, and that was In by Billy Dorsey. Broken Man Within, I need you, Lord, to breathe. When all hope is gone, who can say I need a change? You know, and I was sharing at the beginning of the show that many of us get to this point when we say, I need a second wind, and how can you live again? And I always share with you on the show Romans 10, 9 and 10, that if you confess Jesus Christ as Lord and believe in your heart that he died for your sins and rose again, you shall be saved. Not can be, might be, but shall be. And in that, once that relationship begins, that's when you have this whole new communication, this whole new life, this whole new journey. And because you had that life, Billy, even though you were locked in the studio with no food, molded water, you're emaciated, you're, you know, going through all of this, you weren't just sitting there wasting your time. What were you doing while you were in the studio locked for days there?
Working on music. It was a studio, if nothing else. So even though I may not have had access to the basic things that we need in order to function, I still had full music equipment. I still had a recording booth. So those long days when I was there by myself, I spent all that time writing songs and producing music and, you know, recording myself, hitting the record button and running in the booth and making songs. I didn't have anything else to do. And looking back on that, that was a seminal time in my career because God used that period of time to hone my craft.
Right. Exactly. And the point I want to make with that is that no matter what challenge you might be facing right now, you have something, some gift, some talent, some ability, some little tiny thing that you can be doing, that you could be developing. And once you step out on faith and you do that, you trust God for the rest. I'm sure there were days you were in there creating the music and you're thinking, who's going to hear it? You know, I'm on freeze. Where is this going to go? But you still pushed yourself to get it done. And then finally, one day, something very fantastic happened. YouTube. Wonderful YouTube. What happened?
There was a record producer by the name of Jonathan Rodham. He owns a label called Beluga Heights in Beverly Hills. He's produced songs for Rihanna. He produced her first number one hit, SOS, that everyone would know. He's worked with megastar artists in the pop world. One of his A&Rs happened to be on the internet surfing, looking for new talent, and heard one of our songs that we'd done and reached out to us. And I still have the email, Jackie. He sent it. It was in it was 7 years ago now, got a divine number. And he sent the email that right before Christmas, around this same time of the year. And it said a few words. It said, love your music, let's build. And and from that, you know, next thing I know, within 3 months, we're in Beverly Hills working on songs for T.I. and B.O.B. and Day 26 and Nicki Minaj, just megastar artists. And from there, the rest, as they say, is history.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing that you're saying to me, one, this person finds you because they could only find you if you were working, if you were producing that music and loading it up. The only thing you could do was make that music and load it up. And God allowed them to find you in the midst of all of that and say, let's go do it. And it's amazing to me that you're saying you went from starving, you know, molded water, cold, you know, all of that, to 3 months later being out in sunny California in a home with a job and a paycheck. That's what you're saying to me.
Well, there was a gap in between that. There was a time
of
period
course.
In between that.
But
essentially, yes, I did go from being in a homeless situation to, you know, success.
Right. Let's talk about that gap period for a second, because I think that gap period is the hardest part for people who are waiting for that break. They've done everything that they can do. They've been praying. They've been waiting. They've been working. And an opportunity arises, but you're not quite there. So, you know, my daughter was sharing with me this blog about a woman who received her dream job in Australia, but at the same time she just lost her apartment with her and her kids. And so there's a gap of time between when she starts the dream job and the fact that she's homeless. And that's where we lose it, right? That's where we can lose that focus and actually it become like a very slippery dream that slips through our fingers. So talk to us about what you did and what you said to yourself to get from point A to point B.
First thing I did, Jackie, was got a job in corporate America. I had some friends that allowed me to come sleep on their sofa so that I didn't have to be locked up in the studio. So the next time the guy came back and unlocked the place after I'd gotten their permission, when he opened the doors, I was waiting there with my stuff all, with the stuff that I had left, I was waiting there with it all in garbage bags. And they came and picked me up and took me to their house. And, you know, and they're still a part of my life now, my husband and wife, Gary and Dee Hamilton. They allowed me to come and live on their sofa. And from there, I caught the bus and went to the work source. I got a job in corporate America as a collector at a collection agency. and got my apartment. You know, went through that whole process of just rebuilding. That's what sometimes people think that it happens overnight. It doesn't.
Right.
You've got to reestablish a foundation. And you can believe God all day, but faith without works is dead. So you've got to put in the work. So, you know, once I got an apartment, I started investing in studio equipment and, you know, getting back on my feet that way. And the work that we were able to do with the studio equipment we got is what they heard in Beverly Hills.
Ah, wonderful. Awesome. And were you concerned at all that this wasn't a Christian label or a Christian company, that you were going to be working with secular artists? How did you handle that?
I wasn't concerned about it not being a Christian label, because I understood that you have to have opportunity. And I've never been a person that feels that you've got to, that God can't use some other type of music. There are those people that feel that it has to be Christian music, it's got to be gospel, it's got to be Jesus. You know, it doesn't have to be that. God can take an opportunity and use that to bless you. And if we really look at a lot of the Bible stories, a lot of those things are not necessarily Christian opportunities that he gave people. It's just opportunities to show their giftings. Joseph working for the Pharaoh, was that a Christian opportunity? No, they served pagan gods. People don't look at that, but it's the same exact thing. You know, God gave him an opportunity that was a blessing. The opportunity wasn't a Christian opportunity, but he used it to bless God's people. And that's how I saw it.
Excellent.
It was a door.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well said. Give a word of encouragement to someone right now who has had dreams, but they're really hurting. It really looks bleak. They've tried and failed before. You know, tell them why they should not give up.
The first thing I've got to say before I can tell them to not give up, to be quite honest, is make sure that what you're doing is what God called you to do. There are a lot of people that have dreams that aren't lined up with their destiny that they were created for. For example, prior to when I was growing up, I didn't want to be, you know, a Grammy Award winner. That wasn't my primary, although I did. I wanted to sing, and I love music. So let me say that. The thing that I would have chosen if it was my choice was to be Michael Jordan. You know, a basketball player. So just let me lay that out there, because I hope it'll bless somebody. That was what I would have chosen if it was up to me. I wanted to play basketball. But that wasn't what God created me to do. And so, you know, I could have pursued that. I did play ball in school. You know, my summers working on my jump shot and my crossover and all those different things to be good at it. And I was an okay player, but that wasn't what God created me for. And if I hadn't eventually said, okay, God, I know you created me to do music. You gifted me to do this. This is what you intended for me to do. I would have missed it chasing after what I wanted to do and my dream. Some of the people that we run into that they're continually failing at something, it's not because they're out of season. It's not because God's not listening. It may be because they missed their calling. So the first thing, you know, and I have to say that because, you know, a lot of times people say, just keep at it and dreams do come true. Yes, they do. But what I'm doing and what God has blessed me to have happen in my life, one of those awards of music, he gifted me for that and he created me to do me. That is what I was put on this earth to do by God. So he's going to bless it. He'll bless it when I'm walking in his purpose for me. So first, make sure you're doing what God created you to do. And then once you do that, then you have to stand on the faith that says, you know, that you, it's regardless of how it looks, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. It doesn't matter how hard it is, it doesn't matter how many times you fail, it doesn't matter how long you've been at it, it calls you to do and you're where you need to be at him. We've been made endure for a night, but joy is in the morning. It's a matter of endurance. It's a matter of strength. It's a matter of not letting the obstacles and the things that would come up to you knock you down and take you out of a place where you can be, you know, where you can see out the end.
Well, is that why you entitled your CD Marathon?
Okay. The scriptures that God gave me from Marathon were, for the fish is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, but to the one that endures to the end. And that was the foundation of the album. That's where Second was from. A lot of the song titles have racing. It definitely was to encapsulate the fact that may be difficult, it may be long haul, but if you stay the course, eventually you'll get there. Life is not a race, it's a marathon.
Excellent. Well, we're going to listen to another track from Marathon right now called Highest Praise, and then we'll be right back to hear more about what God is doing in Billy Dorsey's life.
are the shield about us, delivering us from harm. Though 10,000 fall at our right hand, we find safety in your arms. You are the imagination, creator of destiny. Our life, our salvation. You are the God of everything. So in
Billy Dorsey. And, you know, I'm listening to both the theme in Second Wind and Highest Praise. They both remind me quite a bit about Psalms 91, you know, live under the protection of God Most High and stay in the shadow of God Almighty, All Powerful. When you were writing those songs, you know, is that one of the, you know, Psalms that were the premise or came to mind as you were doing preparing these songs?
I definitely would say Psalms 91 influenced Highest Praise, for sure. You know, we dwell in a place as Christians, as believers, of, you know, being under the shadow of the Almighty and being under His arm of protection. And the scripture talking about, you know, that 10,000 fall at our right hand, but we find safety in His arms. Those things are drawn directly from the Psalms, and Psalms 91 was a huge influence in that particular record. For Second Wind was more of a cry of desperation. That was born out of my struggle. That was written from the place where I was when I was homeless. I don't know that there's any scriptural foundation, so much to speak, for that song. That was more of a, for everybody that's in a place where you're ready to give up, for everybody that's in a place where you think God may have forgotten you. you know, Lord, send a second wind to heal the brokenness within. You know,
right.
It was more of a cry and more of a rallying cry for people to understand that, yes, he's able to send the second wind when we need it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he's deserving of the highest praise even when you're in those moments. Oftentimes that's when we don't feel like giving it, but he's absolutely deserving of it. And
that's right.
I wanted to talk to you about where you are right now in your career. A lot of people look from the outside and they see, you know, the glamour. You know, you've always got those nice aviator shades on, and you know, you got your album covers. You're winning awards. Talk to us about the bitter and the sweet, the reality of being in this industry, the cost that you pay to do it, because there's always a cost. You don't just get there. And just as you were sharing earlier, that gap period of time, how you have to put in the work, that faith without works is dead. So talk to us now about the bittersweet of actually attaining the success that you wanted.
The biggest thing that I've lost in the course of the process, Jackie, I went through a divorce. Had been married for 9 years, have three beautiful daughters. And, you know, I would say, looking back at that, having the opportunity to have gone through the other side, anybody that's been through a divorce knows that it's like a death in a lot of ways. There's a grieving process just as though you actually physically lost a loved one, because in a very real sense, someone that was a part of you now is no longer a part of you. I would say that this line of work, let's not even talk in terms of ministry, but just the entertainment industry, it's hungry. And what I mean by that is you've got to invest your energy in it. You've got to invest your time in it. You've got to invest your money in it. You've got to invest so much of yourself that if you don't have balance, you're going to lose, because whatever you put into that, you're taking from somewhere else. And in my case, I took away from my family. For me to become successful, for my team and I to achieve success, we had to spend time on the road. We had to spend time and money traveling and networking and in studios and working with all these people. Well, home is being neglected while you're doing that.
Right.
And the thing that I've seen is I can't honestly name one person who's been tremendously successful who their marriage didn't suffer by virtue of the effort and the energy that it takes to become successful. Now, some of them are able to stay together.
Right.
And in our case, we unfortunately were not. But I've seen the cost and the toll that you have to pay if you want to travel that road.
That's very interesting. And, you know, you see time on the road and someone might just get the impression of a gig here or there. But isn't it something like 44 weeks out of the year new artists are on the road trying to establish themselves city to city?
That is exactly right. You're lucky if you get 2 months that you're home with your family. You're going to miss holidays.
Wow.
You're going to miss birthdays. You're going to miss anniversaries. You're going to miss those things while you're trying to establish something, because you don't have the luxury yet of being able to say, I'm going to take this date. No, I'm not going to take that one. You have to take what comes, because every opportunity could be the one that catapults you to the next level of success. Now, once you become more established, then you can say, no, I'm going to miss this, and I'm not going to take anything on that day. But at that time, I wasn't at that place.
Right, right. And yeah, that is extremely bittersweet, because the one thing you're working for is for your family, and at the same time, you're losing your family, and that's a lot of pressure to withstand for anyone. I know that you shared that the Lord has actually given you a prophetic ability to hear from him, and something you've had since you were a young child. And he actually provided a word for you about your life and your journey. And you say that it played out almost exactly to the letter. Can you share it with us?
Yes. When I was homeless, there was a particular instance that happened, Jackie, where I friends had brought some groceries for me to eat, and had gone to sleep with them tucked near me so that no one could come in the night and take them, which happens sometimes. And woke up to the sound of rats eating that food, and I cried out to God. I that was at my wit's end. That's where second wind comes from, of, you know, when I'm tired of the race and I've taken all I can take. That was the night that I was ready to end it all. And I cried out to God, and I said, why am I going through this? Those were my exact words. I remember it vividly. No one was around. I was crying. And I used to cry myself to sleep a lot of the nights because I would be so hungry. You know, that your body literally starts to eat itself when you go so long without eating. That's why you see the African kids and they look emaciated. That's real.
Mm-hmm.
And so this particular night, I thought I was going to not have to suffer that. And then I wake up to rats eating the food. So now it's inedible for me. And I broke down crying. And I cried out to God. I said, why am I going through this? And the voice of the Lord spoke to me as clearly as you can hear me now and said, I want you to pay attention to every detail of what you're going through, because one day I'm going to take these trials and make them your testimony. And the Holy Spirit said that one day you're going to win Grammy Awards. Well, he said it in order. One day you're going to win Stellar Awards. You're going to win Dove Awards. You're going to win Grammy Awards. You'll have number one albums, and the world will know your name, but it will not be for your glory. It will be for my glory. Those were the exact words from the Holy Spirit. And in that order, we won a Stellar Award in January 2012. We won our first Dove in April 2012. We won our first Grammy in February of 2013. We've since won another Stellar and another Dove. He promised I'd have number one albums. We've got four. And he promised that the world would know my name for his glory. My first album, Marathon, hit the top 40 on the charts in 3 hours. I just finished a world tour, literally coming back from Brazil, sharing my testimony and singing songs from that album. And Pastor Joel Osteen at Lakewood has, for the last year, he and Pastor Lisa Osteen and Deborah George, one of the evangelists there, are helping me to do a movie about my life story, going from being homeless to God bringing me to this place of great victory. So, yes, every promise that God made when I was homeless, in order, and I posted these things on social media before they ever happened.
Uh-huh.
So people were actually celebrating with us as they happened. When the Grammy happened, there were people that I have never met in the flesh that were actually posting that they were watching the awards because they remembered God's promise, and they were crying while they were watching the awards when they saw us win the Grammy. So God used my life, as he said, not for my glory, but for his glory.
Amen. Amen to that. I actually felt the power of that because, you know, for people to be looking, you know, looking for the Lord is an amazing thing. And to actually see a move of God is absolutely powerful and wonderful. As you're traveling around the world and sharing your story, what are some of the responses? What are some of the things you're seeing and hearing from people?
There are a lot of people, Jackie, that don't believe that God's real in the church. And that, to me, honestly, I get it from people outside of the church. I anticipate that. People that have never, they've never had an experience with God, you know, how can you believe in something you've never had an encounter with? You know, I get that. But as I'm traveling, I run into a lot of people that they did not believe God was real at all, like he didn't exist. And when I share my testimony and they feel the Spirit of God pulling at them through what he's done in my life, I literally have people come up to me and say, you gave me a reason to believe in God. You gave me a reason to see that he's real. Looking at your life gave me hope that there is a God that cares about my life. I get those kind of things, and I don't even know how to deal with that. I mean, I get it. I understand it's ministry. I understand that God told me that was going to happen, but it's so overwhelming. Usually when I share my testimony, I'm boo-hoo crying too.
My goodness.
Every time.
Now, I also want to touch on this because your musical style, let's be clear, you're not commissioned. You're not Shirley Caesar. You're not even Kirk Franklin. You are definitely a contemporary artist. And, in fact, some might even consider you more of a secular genre than a Christian genre, right? So how do you define yourself and your music? Who are you appealing to?
I'm appealing to people who grew up with the same influences as me. I'm appealing to people that listen to the music that's on the radio right now, not Christian radio, but secular radio right now, and they need that same, that's the type of music that they're acclimated to, that's the type of music that resonates with them, but they need that same music with an inspirational or Christian message behind it. I make music for the people that love the kind of music that inspired me, because although I was groomed on, commissioned in John P. Key and Shirley Caesar at home, I was exposed to Jodeci. I was exposed to R. Kelly. I was exposed to Usher. I was exposed to, you know, the hip-hop when I was around, you know, I was a kid, but I was around when rap really took off. Those things influenced me musically just as much as, if not more than, the commissions and those guys that maybe I learned how to sing from singing along with. So I create music that speaks to the person that doesn't want to hear gospel music, but they need the message of Jesus Christ.
They need the message, and so you're that link. That you're the CD they're going to pop in or, you know, tune in and listen to on their dial, and you can make that connection with them, you know.
That's right.
I also noticed, because you've been posting lyrics to your upcoming CD masterpiece, and I noticed you have a lot of lyrics that focus on – women and the fact that, you know, they shouldn't settle and what real love actually looks like. What made you decide to speak to that or those issues?
I'm so glad you asked me that question, because that's something that I've really been seeking God for and wrestling with. Let me be 100% transparent here, as I've been throughout the interview. Even if it wasn't my decision to have a divorce, I acknowledge that in the beginning of our marriage, I was so selfish. I was so self-centered. I was so focused on – let me paint a timeline for you. I met her 6 months after I was homeless.
Uh-huh.
So you imagine somebody that's literally still trying to gain weight again. I was literally in that place. If someone that was around could say something about it, I was in the gym all the time working out. I was taking protein, you know, creatine, all those things to gain weight back. I was working out 3 times a day because I was just coming out of that. You take somebody's mindset that's been locked inside of a building, and God tells them they're going to be successful, but they understand the amount of work that they're going to have to do. I was so driven and focused when I met her on what I needed to do to become successful, that even though I didn't eloquate that to her, I didn't share with her what I was going through.
Mm.
I was so focused on it that she basically just became a passenger in the car on the way to my destiny rather than my co-pilot. And so a lot of the song things that you're seeing, you know, song titles from the new album, Give You Jesus and Does He Know, which is talking about, does the man that's in your life know how precious you are to God? And does he know the things that make you happy? Those were my shortcomings that now I get the opportunity. Again, my life has become my testimony. God said that one day I'm going to take your trials and make them your testimony. Well, why would me going through a divorce be any different? If I can speak to some young man that's just getting married or is about to get married and say, you better appreciate that woman. You better acknowledge the value of the woman that God has placed in your life. You better treat her like a queen. You better honor her the way that God honors her. You better love her the way Christ loves the church. If I can share that from the perspective of the things that I didn't do, not only have I grown from my testimony, but now I get an opportunity even in that regard to be a blessing to other people. I believe that we write and create from our pain. And as I've gone through the healing process, I was also in the middle of working on an album, so the natural thing for me to write was to write about what I was going through, but God just gifted me with a way to do it to where he still, again, gets the glory out of it.
I really thank you for your transparency. I know for a fact that's what makes the difference. That's what touches the heart, and I am absolutely sure that you have gripped some young man's heart tonight, some young woman's heart, and help them to understand what are the tools they need to have in order to move forward. Number one, a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. Number two, make sure that the path that you're pursuing is the path that the Lord has for you, where he has gifted you, where he has, anointed you to move forward. Make sure you're listening to his voice. You know, three, don't move in selfishness. You know, selfishness, self-centeredness, it really never helps us to propel forward. You also said that faith without works is dead. So even when you're looking for that vision and that dream, it doesn't mean that you're not supposed to work hard and get that 9-to-5 and do whatever you have to do to make it happen. And that, you know, it's bittersweet. It has a cost. There is a price to pay. You know, don't get caught up just in the cars and the magazines and the awards. There is a price to pay, and that price can be hard work, but that price could even be greater, as in your case. So I'm so thankful. This was more than I could ask for, and I'd love to have you back again in terms of talking about relationships and couples, because that is a whole nother show in itself, and I think you would have a lot to share on that.
I would be honored. You say the word, and I'm here.
Wonderful. Well, this has been an absolute blessing. Thank you for joining us, Billy Dorsey. Tell the people where they can find you and find your music.
BillyDorsey.com is the easiest way to find me and find my music. I'm on any social media network, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the like, at @BillyDTheBridge, B-I-L-L-Y, letter D as in David, The Bridge. And that's where I can be found.
And speaking of The Bridge, I want to give a special shout-out to Bridgepoint Media Productions.
Yes,
excellent,
my sister.
Excellent. LaDonna, Lady LaDonna, she's fabulous. She connected us together, and she's a wonderful powerhouse of resources. Find her on Facebook as well. That's Bridgepoint Media Productions. And I want you to be your own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it, and he's the one who gave his life for you. So until then, don't give up.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.